on that later. So if you're interested, you can attend that session as well. And while she was at the GTU, she was not only affiliated with the Church Trinity School of the Pacific, where she served on their admissions committee, but she was also active in LDSSA, their student council. And since then, she's appeared many times as a guest speaker at the RLDS Peace Chapel, because her advisor was RLDS, and was apparently quite impressed with her.
No,
a chapel in Berkeley.
No.
And the thing that I find so moving about Janet's scholarship is that she's not only an incredible academic, but she has a courage in her approach that I really admire. She's not locked up in some ivory tower, sitting back in some armchair. She's going out and taking on courageous issues that mean a great deal to many of us in the Mormon or post-Mormon community. So here's Janet.
Thank you. Apparently I'm supposed to stand behind the podium. Oh, there's the mic. Okay. Thank you, Kristen. It looks like he taped it to the podium, so I think I'm kind of stuck, which is sort of unfortunate because I feel sort of stifled back here. But so as Kristen said, I studied at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, and the title of my comments today is The Graduate Theological Union, the Birthplace of Sunstone. And I think that there are very few people who realize that Sunstone actually got started in this really dynamic place that we call Alphabet Soup. And we call that because the GTU is made up of 9 Protestant and Catholic seminaries and 11 centers for a variety of studies. And in an effort to make sense of all of it, we refer to everything by their initials. So, for example, I was affiliated with the Church Divinity School of the Pacific, which we call CDSP, the Pacific School of Religion, which we call PSR. And if I keep on going, by the end of this, we'll all be hungry, and we'll have to break out the alphabet cereal, and so I won't go on. But the GTU is an interesting and dynamic, and in many ways on the American religious landscape and in the field of religious studies, is one of the most unique centers for study and for the study of religion and religion in our lives. Back in the late 1800s, several Catholic and Protestant denominations established seminaries in the Greater Bay Area. And in the 1930s, several of these Protestant seminaries relocated to Berkeley, and they did this for a variety of reasons. Number one, they were drawn to the proximity of the University of California at Berkeley. They wanted to be able to afford themselves or avail themselves of those world-class facilities and the resources that were available through Cal. And in the beginning, it became a cooperation and a correlation between these seminaries and Cal Berkeley. And there was a good correlation, and they were good to list cross courses in their catalogs and to provide their students with the ability to engage in cross disciplines. But over time, as each of these seminaries grew and as Cal grew and became more prominent, they all began to become isolated and to break off and began to do their own thing. And for about 10 years, they just sort of floated around out there. Now, of course, at the same time in history, we have the Depression, we have the rise of National Socialism in Germany and subsequently World War II and all of the things that went along with that, all of the horrors of war. And in post-World War II America, what arose was a spirit of ecumenism and ecumenical cooperation. The devastation of the war had disorganized the churches in Europe, and in an effort to come together and in an effort to facilitate ideas of peace and justice, churches began working together. And in the Protestant model, this came together as the World Council of Churches. In the Catholic model, it came together in the formation of Vatican II, which was that radical seminar that took place in 1962 that redefined many things in the Catholic Church and set many things on their head. But out of this came an understanding of theological education, and it moved away from denominational isolation to a more ecumenical approach. And out of this, consortia of seminaries began to appear in some of the larger U.S. cities, including New York and Boston, Cambridge, that area. In 1958, a cooperative agreement and an ad hoc committee was formed among the Protestant seminaries in Berkeley and in the San Francisco Bay Area. And this ad hoc committee included representatives from the Baptist Church, the Episcopal Church, the Lutheran Church, the Presbyterians, and an interdenominational church which consists of Civic School of Religion at the GTU. And in 1962, they signed the Articles of Incorporation, and the Graduate Theological Union was created. That same year, the Unitarians joined as well. And in 1964, the first Catholic school was admitted. St. Albert's College of Benicia relocated to Berkeley and became the Dominican School of Philosophy and Theology, BSPT. Is everybody making notes? There's going to be a quiz afterwards. PDFT? In 1966, Alma College, which was located in Los Gatos at the time, relocated to the GTU and became the Jesuit School of Theology. And in 1968, without a name change, the Franciscan School of Theology relocated from Mission Santa Barbara down the coast. I can't understand why. Santa Barbara is so beautiful, but be that as it may. Between 1968 and 1970, a Center for Judaic Studies, which is now known as the Richard S. Diner Center for Jewish Studies, was established at the GTU. There was a Center for Urban Black Studies and a Center for Women and Religion. And at the present time, the GTU now includes a Center for Ethics and Social Policy, a Center for the Arts, Religion, and Education, the Center for Theology and the Natural Sciences, an Institute of Buddhist Studies, the New College of Berkeley, which prepares Christian laypersons for active ministries in those settings which God has called them to, Pacific and Asian American Center for Theology and Strategies, the Patriarch Athenagoras Orthodox Institute, which embodies the Eastern Orthodox tradition, and the School of Applied Theology. And in the last year, the GTU has now added a Center for Studies in Gay and Lesbian Ministry. So there's a lot that goes on at the GTU. But what is the GTU? What is the mission of the Graduate Theological Union? In 1995, the GTU, its president, its faculty, board of trustees, the staff, and the student body developed a new mission statement. And the mission of the GTU is to educate men and women for vocations of ministry and scholarship, to equip leaders for a future of diverse religions and cultures, to teach patterns of faith which nurture justice and peace, and to serve as an educational and theological resource for local communities, the nation, and the world. The GTU is a consortium of interdependent theological schools, affiliated centers, and program units joined in a venture of faith in God, one another, and the future. In 1974, a young man named Scott Kenny and another young man named Keith Norman arrived at the Graduate Theological Union as divinity students. And in that same year, they banded together in the home of E.E. Erickson, decided that they would publish a journal for students to exchange ideas and experiences in Mormon life, and thus we have the birth of Sunstone. And so the GTU has been the jumping-off point for an interesting dialogue across religions. It's a unique setting. If you've ever been over to Berkeley, it resides just north of Berkeley campus on a hill that is known as Holy Hill. And located just down the street from the GTU is the LDS Institute of Religion. And I point at Jerry because she and her husband used to be in the bishopric for the student ward that was there. And I know Jerry shares many fond memories. And the institute director at the time for the last 10 years was a man named Brent Collette, who about 6 months ago passed away. And so we have this tie with the GTU, but we don't, and I'll get into that a little more here in a moment. 1978, 4 years later, Peggy Fletcher Speck, who many of us know from her articles in the Salt Lake Tribune and who many of us have met personally, came along and also went to the GTU, and her intention was to just study religion. She had no, you know, agenda. Her end goal was not, oh, I'm going to have an MA by the end of this or a PhD. It was just, I just want to study. And that's what she did. And out of that and out of her involvement in Sunstone, she had a dream. And that dream was to develop what she has effectively called the Sunstone Theological School. Nothing has really come of that, though. And that's part of what I want to talk about today, is that in this institution, the Graduate Theological Union, is there a place for Mormon studies? There has been some talk recently about starting up a center for the study of Mormonism at Utah Valley State College. I have some very strong feelings about whether that's possible or not. But the GTU is structured to balance interdenominational partnership with clear denominational affiliations. And I think of all the possible ecumenical consortial type things that the Mormons could be involved in, the GTU is perhaps the most promising. And for a couple of reasons. In 1995, I arrived at the Graduate Theological Union hardly knowing what I was going to do, but my intention was to study religion and society, and I had chosen the GTU because I'd had an advisor in college who had been there, and this was someone who I respected and admired and who had been very influential in my formative experience as a scholar. In fact, I often say that my undergraduate experience as a scholar was much more articulate and better written than my experience as a graduate student. And it's a direct result of this particular professor. But when I arrived at the GTU, I thought, oh, goody, I'm the only Mormon here. Actually, to my surprise and great delight, there were four or five of us there. And we all thought we were the only one there. So we were all grossly disappointed that we weren't, but be that as it may, we have shared a unique experience together. And this is a place where people come together in a world full of strife that is often underwritten by religious differences. We see it all over the world. We see it right now most poignantly and violently in the Middle East. We see it in the various interpretations among the Muslim peoples. We see it among Christians. We see it right here within our own denomination. When we consider the strife, the GTU is a miracle because it brings together people from across the spectrum and it sits them down and they say, it doesn't matter whether I'm Catholic or Protestant or Buddhist or Jewish or Mormon or nothing. We have come to reason together and to build on a consensus of faith and a belief in the divine. And so I think the Graduate Theological Union is one of those places where Mormon studies could thrive. But this raises a lot of questions. How do we do this? In talking with Brent Collette several years ago, he said that the church had started to look into being involved in the GTU. But the problem is that the church doesn't grant degrees in divinity. And the Master's Divinity degree is a degree that is given to those individuals who become pastors and ministers in their churches. And since the Mormon church is a lay-led church and we don't have professional pastors, we can't grant a degree in something we don't perpetuate. So that's a problem. The other problem is that we don't teach theology and we don't teach religion like others do. In other words, we tend to be far less methodical and far less academic in our approach, and we tend to be far more esoteric and, what is the word I want, a little more literal. Scripture is what it is, and there's very little to dispute, and we're not going to look into the history of it, and that's what Sunstone is for. So we need the GTU for. Who needs a degree in it besides? The majority of us that are involved in religious studies know what this is like. We're already suspect. We sit in church and people question what we do. And so then we get to a point where we start talking about our work in very circumspect ways. I started out 5 years ago saying, I'm here to study for a master's degree and I'm going to write about the temple. And by the end of my experience, 5 years or a year ago, I was saying, I'm here to study religion and the effect of ritual on the landscape of religious people's lives. Then I didn't have people going, oh, you're writing anti-Mormon stuff. And I know that there are others in this room who have studied religion who've had very similar experiences. So we have this struggle between wanting the world to understand who we are and what we have to contribute to the religious landscape, and our own internal insecurities and fears about how to go about that, and trying to reconcile those two and come together and bring them together and have a dialogue that isn't proselyting. So how do we do that? Say things like, I'm here to study religion and write about the effect of ritual in people's lives. It's a constant struggle for those of us who do it, but it's also very gratifying. And I would venture to say that there is a setting where we can do this, but I think what needs to be done is we have to decide how we want that to look and whether we're willing to take risks that reach beyond Sunstone and the Mormon History Association and dialogue, and that stretch out in new ways where we can engage in this dialogue and in this ecumenical approach, like our brothers and sisters on Holy Hill, and create a place where people come to understand Mormons in all of their ways, in all of their shapes, in all of their shades, in their culture, in their theology, in their little quirks, in the things that make them the good people that they can be. There is a way for us to come together and to do that. But I don't have all of the answers. And everybody keeps looking to me and saying, well, Janet, you've been to the Graduate Theological Union. How do we do this? I don't know. But I think it's the place for us to be able to do it. I think we have to get over the fact that, you know, we don't have to grant degrees for students in a Master of Divinity. Do we do this as a study center? Do we establish a center for the study of Mormon life? What do we call it? How do we build this? What do we want it to look like? And what's our point? So, as much as anything, the little thought I've given it, I'm also wondering if anyone else out here has given it any thought and how that has looked or what they've considered. How do we grow beyond Brigham Young University and make Mormonism a serious study? It had a huge influence on the landscape of American religious life. And I think it will continue to do so. It's one of the fastest growing religions in the world. Projections by Rodney Stark say that by the year 2080, members of the church will number 230 million. That's a pretty big number. That's the population of the United States right now, I think, isn't it? 230 million? That was every person in America. Boy, wouldn't we all be thrilled? Finally! We'd get what we'd always hoped for. Everybody will be a Mormon. Sign up now. What was that about door knocking you were saying, Thea? So I'm going to ask you, those of you who are out there, and I'm going to actually put Mary Ellen on the spot, too, because Mary Ellen has attended Claremont Graduate School in Claremont, California, and has studied in a theological setting, and Dan as well. But I'm also asking you, is the GTU a place that we could or want to be?
I don't know a lot about the GTU, but I think the climate might be right by now. For example, President Hinckley encouraging us to attend Interfaith Council meetings, which I attend and where I am very suspect still.
And why are you suspect?
They have really kind of odd feelings about evangelical churches.
Okay.
They're afraid I'm there to proselyte.
Okay.
So I have to be very, very careful. It was interesting, the other day they had a long discussion about they're not attracting young people to the ministry. And I felt there was a lot I could have said and did love myself.
Well, and this is a problem, I think, too, in terms of scholarship in the Mormon Church, and there will be some discussion about that later today in other sessions, that there are there are young people coming up in the church who want to study and do Mormon studies, but it's been tenuous, and there's been, you know, some debate about whether that's appropriate or not. And of course, there have been some incidences in the last several years where people have been, you know, routed out of the church for their scholarship. But is it possible to combine faith and scholarship and bring it to a place of ecumenism?
Other churches do it all the time.
Yeah, why can't we? Mary Ellen?
I think that's where Mormonism is a little short-sighted. As you said, other religions have been studying religion, either their own or that of, you know, anywhere in the world. And there's a lot that Mormons can learn from what's already been done elsewhere, and we tend to be so insular that we don't look out to see what's been done either in women's studies in one religion or in creative theology, liberation theology. We don't see what's out there because we're so busy looking at our own navels, I guess.
Okay.
But I think that's the starting point, which is there's a whole lot out there that we can learn from. And, you know, let's look outward a bit more discovered.
Jerry?
It's interesting to me that in recent history, the 1930s, the church actively sent members of the church church back to Chicago and out to Berkeley to get graduate degrees, the new theory of the world, and with the some of the other and the church actively sent those guys out to get their PhD so they could come back and teach religion to Mormons. And that sort of dissipated after World War II and became a little insular again. But in your research at all, have you looked at a resurgence of that or a bringing that sort of thing back to the church?
I think what's happening is there isn't an endorsed policy. Armand Ma will talk about this a little more this afternoon, about how there was this kind of unsponsored sector in the church. It was sort of known that there was scholarship and it was encouraged, and these men who engaged in it, and they were mostly men. Mary Ellen would have to help me out here, but right, the Leonard Arrington, you know, that whole group of men. So at one point it was encouraged, and then I think what happened was the growth of the church was so explosive after the 1960s that there became a need to correlate everything. And we all know what the result of that has been. So, and of course I was born in 1968, so who am I to say? But, you know, all I can tell you is based on my other experiences in other churches, it's like going to a business meeting. You know, with the need to somehow streamline and meet the needs of a growing church populace, and a populace that was extremely diverse. You know, we're not just talking about, you know, a church that remained an American religion. You know, we're talking about a church that has become a very international religion. There became a need to streamline some things and to correlate, and yet I think in our efforts to correlate, we over-correlated. Or we over-medicated, I guess. And one of the results has been a loss of individuals who pursue scholarship and who feel like it's okay to do that. For those of us... Go ahead.
In some ways, what correlation did for people was to say, we will take care of the business of the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's your individual responsibility to take care of your spiritual needs. And so what's happened is people have spent so much time
I hope so, Jerry. I think you have a far more optimistic attitude than I do, but that's the one thing that I love about you.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
it is our individual responsibility, so people can set up rules.
But they don't want to do.
Right. I mean, and I agree with what you're saying, but I think and what I hope we could develop would be something that would last, and it wouldn't just be. And I'm grateful for Sunstone. Please don't get me wrong. I'm glad that we have this, but what do we have? We have a magazine and we have a symposium once a year. We don't have something that starts in September and runs until May. Right. Did you have a comment, sir?
Sometimes we like it, sometimes we don't.
Well, we like it when it speaks in favor of us. Yes, when it suits us. Yes. You had a comment?
Yeah, I was going to say that I've been a member for 10 years, and during my late teen years, I started going through the doubting phase because the missionaries came to our door, presented the lessons, and my family became Mormon, and my older sister is, of course, under BYU and married to become missionaries. And I felt so alone, because I felt like I was the only one who would question, you know, because it was more of a, you know, my family got baptized, and where was my decision, and And so my early college years, I really started searching. Like, why is Mormonism true? Is it, if I become a Mormon and I'm devoted to this and I'm worthy, when I die, will it be true? And those were really hard questions. And I think it was a very lonely time because my family rejected me. They were very scared of me just questioning. And it wasn't that I was anti-Mormon. I just wanted to know. And I can only imagine that it would be like being gay, and that's not okay. You're feeling you're not okay to be gay and Mormon. And that's how I felt. It wasn't okay to be a daughter and be a Mormon. And I think the whole thinking needs to shift to a different light, that scholarship is so, so needed. And like one of my favorite verses from the Bible is from the woman at the well, and she had five husbands, and Jesus came to her and says, I know exactly what you've done in your life. And she went to the town, and she knew hardly anything about Jesus. And she said, this man told me about my life, and the town believed because of her testimony. And then you see Paul, the apostle, who goes to a city and says, let's stay in these temples and reason with you. And there's a place for testimony, and there's a place for emotion, but there's definitely a place for reason. And I think studying Mormon theology is so amazing.
I think the metaphor is appropriate too, in the sense that there are many of us as scholars in this generation who are somewhat closeted. Mary Ellen was here last year when I was finishing up my thesis and was here for my defense. And the night before my defense, I was still writing the title for my thesis. And I said, Mary Ellen, okay, I said, this is what I'm going to call it. I said, I'm going to call it Tell Eve About Serpent, the effects of extraordinary worship in the lives of religious adult Mormons. She says, Janet, you can't call it that. It's about the temple. Own it. You've got to have it in the title. Otherwise, it's irrelevant. Otherwise, you're buying into the mentality that this is something you should be concerned about and that you should be scared of, when in fact, this is a work of faith. And I don't want to stand here and tout my own work, but that is what people have described it as, is that not only is it a work of scholarship, but it's a work of faith. And so it can be done, and it can be done in settings like the Graduate Theological Union and Claremont. And Dan, I think you had a comment.
Yeah, my comments are sort of a little bit focused more on like how do we get something started or something like that. But share an experience. In 1997, the American Academy of Religion was here in San Francisco, and James Fowler, famous scholar, faith, just a real big name, developmental, psychological, religion. I happened to get sat next to him from the Salt Lake to San Francisco flight. And just, looking over and seeing what he was studying, I figured we're both going to the same conference, we start up a conversation, and he's spoken twice since then. And he shared great feelings. It's so unique, it's so wonderful that you have this thing. I really enjoyed my time there. We would love to have a Mormon theologian at Emory. And I'm just like 1 year after my dissertation. really, really, really. And then he stepped back and he thought, he goes, I bet we could do that. He says, but you'd probably need to have the chair endowed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be happy to probably provide this. At least that's what he thought the climb right then was. You provide the salary, we'll provide the office space and the presence on campus, and we'd love to have our students register with somebody who's qualified and all that. So he thought, and at least that's for me, is some of the bigger places, the Emory's, the Chicago's, the GTU's, that would be tougher here because you'd have to sort of affiliate with one school or not. But if they could at least have strong people there, one of the chief ways for them would be if we could get people to endow.
Well, and this is the beauty of the GTU. Can I please designate where my time? We could come up with a big like IRS type form. Endowments to theological seminaries. I'm all for that. Actually, you just put in my name there, Janet. No. I think the one thing about the GTU that really makes it possible for us to be a part of that setting and a part of that community. And if you get a chance to ever get over there, go over and walk around for a little while. It's just got a great atmosphere. And again, like I said, you've got all of these people from all over the world. They're Buddhist monks, women, shaved heads, little gray robes, wandering around, Buddhist monks, right there next to the little Jesuit guys and they're, you know, and the Franciscans and their robes. I mean, it's fantastic. But I think one of the ways that the GTU, or that Mormon studies could develop at the GTU would be through a center. And we wouldn't necessarily have to have a seminary. We wouldn't have to have, we wouldn't be required then to provide a degree in divinity. We could actually just make it a master's degree and even a PhD.
What does the church say with those institutes right down the street? What do we need?
Well, yeah, and
that's what they said. I'm not saying that.
And that is, you know, that's part of the problem is that what the institute is, you know, basically for those of us who want to develop beyond Sunday school to go and study scripture and ideas. And that's perfectly fine, but it's not strictly academic. What I'm talking about is sitting down and doing what people like myself and Mary Ellen and Dan and even some of the guys who built this foundation, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, Armand Ma and Leonard Arrington and Lowell Bunyan and some of these people, who sat down and said, somewhat what Mary Ellen said, we stood outside of ourselves. We've stood outside of our faith. That doesn't mean we've given up our faith. That doesn't mean we've surrendered our testimony. But we're standing outside of our faith, outside of our institution, and we're looking in. And we're looking at how that institution manifests itself on a variety of landscapes. In my case, sociology. In Mary Ellen's case, women's studies. In Dan's case, I don't know.
Philosophy.
Thank you. Philosophy. You know, how does that manifest itself? There's so much in Mormonism, I think, that is so rich. And this is part of what I loved about writing my thesis. I believe that one of the most pivotal aspects of Mormonism is the temple, and it's one of the most defining parts of Mormonism. And so I looked at that from a sociological approach. How does that look? What is the effect of that in Mormons' lives? What are the practical, real effects of this in the lives of Mormons? And so I think that there are topics like that that can be and are works of faith and are appropriate, and there are settings where those can be done and they should be encouraged and pursued. And so something like a Center for the Study of Mormonism, I think, is a great idea. I don't think it will work at Utah Valley State College. I don't think they're doing anything yet. There has been some back and forth. I know Kim McCall will be talking about this a little more today. There's been some back and forth about establishing a study for the center, or a center for the study of Mormonism or Mormon life. I'm not even sure what the name of it is officially. Thank you. Mormon Cultural Studies. So basically what we'll be talking about is big hair and jello. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Jean England is with Mormon literature.
Right. Jean England has been involved in developing this center as well, but there's been, I've heard some apocryphal type stories that on the one hand, Jean was given an endowment from the National Endowment for the Humanities, but then there's one of those little stories out there that says someone from Salt Lake drove down to Orem and sat down with the head of the department and said something, and at the end of that, there was no longer a program. Now, I don't have all of the facts for that. I certainly don't want to substantiate rumors. But there certainly has been a desire to start something up. Dan?
Just to clarify, this is slightly what I know, a little better than rumor on a lot of it. They're still administering this $25,000 grant. They have a series of speakers who are coming in this year. And sort of the thing that they were trying to do was to develop the interest, the faculty support, and to provide a report at the end of this year on how we would then go about getting this program going. What happened was, Gene, with the power of his personality and everything like that, had everybody, you know, seen how wonderful and positive this was. But then, and so the board of trustees and everybody at UBSD were feeling really good. But what I've heard is just a, you know, an errant statement that this would be here, and of course you can't study this without studying this, and so just the climate, because they're academics, they're the board of trustees, they're the presidents of the university, they're still Latter-day Saints. And it seemed like that there's a whoa, maybe we went too fast on this. So I don't think it's dead, but there's been some less lost than it is yet.
Let me tell you what my vision and my hope is. Having been to the Graduate Theological Union and having been closely affiliated with others who have attended similar settings, my hope is that we will get over some of our insecurities about what it means to study Mormon life and realize that it's not a threat, that in many ways, for many of us, it's a struggle and it's an act of faith, because we have to reconcile what we understand through our academic studies, through our training as critical analyzers and as people who apply methodologies, against very deeply ingrained beliefs, and against our testimonies of what we know is true. I have a testimony that God lives, that Jesus is the Christ, that Joseph Smith was a man who spoke with God. But I also know that Joseph Smith was a man. And Joseph Smith sometimes is portrayed as more than he really was. But that doesn't take away from the fact that I believe he spoke with God. And so what I hope is that we can develop a place that we can bring together some of the great minds that I think are coming up in Mormonism, and people who are willing to take some risks and to look at things in really hard ways that sometimes call our faith into question, and encourage that. I hope that we can develop a center at a place like the Graduate Theological Union where that can take place. I don't think it will work at Utah State College because I think it's too close to the source. And I think there needs to be a little distance and a little objectivity. And I think we need to pull ourselves out and do that very hard and difficult thing of standing outside of ourselves and looking in and seeing who we are, what we are, and presenting to the world in a way that isn't just about adding numbers to our ranks, but is about making us more accessible. Because as it is now, we're not very accessible. We're not very accessible. We're not very warm and fuzzy, as much as we like to think we are. But I think that pursuits in scholarship, at least I know that's been my goal. My goal has been to build bridges of understanding. The pursuit of scholarship can make us a warm and fuzzy people, if you will. Jack.
Well, you're not asking the questions, but I just wondered.
That's okay, I'll take questions.
I think God is hoping that mankind will be able to bring the left and right paths together. I'm wondering, do you see any major breakthroughs or major steps in that direction coming out of GTU, and do they offer any kind of paradigm or hope?
There have been some discussions in the past. Those discussions have not been picked up. And like I said, Brent Collette was the individual having those discussions. And it's been very unfortunate. Brent's death has been a blow to many of us, and especially to many of us in the scholarly community, because Brent represented for many of us this marvelous balance between the secular and the sacred. He was a man of immense devotion and faith and testimony, but he was also a man who was well-read and very intelligent and very adventurous. I mean, you could find this guy in a Buddhist temple worshiping with Buddhists just as easily as you could find him sitting on the stand as a bishop in his ward. So I suppose what I'm saying here is I'm willing to take up that battle, but what I need to know is are there people who want that battle fought and who think that it's worth the time and worth the effort and, in fact, may even be willing to put in the money and the resources to make it happen? Because I think we can make it happen at the GTU, and I think the GTU would be thrilled to have us there, without question. But it would certainly take a lot of thought about what we would want it to be, how it would need to be, who we would want to have there, and what we were willing to do.
I have one other question.
Sure. Isn't that music great?
It comes about because of your reference to stepping outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me that Gene England, one of his great accomplishments, is to stay within himself while looking at the world through Mormon eyes, blessing his Chevrolet and things like that. You know, that kind of blow your mind in a way, and then, mm-hmm. by golly, he managed to stay within his culture, and yet see it whole, or see pieces of it.
Right. And I think that those of us who are in scholarship are staying within and looking without. When I say standing outside and looking in, what I mean is that when you begin this process, you literally almost viscerally have to take yourself and, boy, I feel like I'm being serenaded. This is really going to my head here. When I say you stand outside of yourself, you actually have to take this painful moment in your life where you literally stand outside and you say, okay, this is what I've known all my life. This is what I believe. This is where my faith lies. I'm going to question it all. and I'm going to let the chips fall where they may, and I'm going to start standing outside and assuming that I'm not Mormon, and I'm going to look in and see, what does that look like? And then what you start to see is funny big hair and jello, among other things. But eventually, what happens is I think you come full circle. And like I said, you're able to take certain things and reconcile them. In other words, I can stand here and say with conviction that I know Joseph Smith was a man of God and that he spoke with and saw God. I also know Joseph Smith was a man. Joseph Smith destroyed a printing press, violated the First Amendment under a charter that was really circumspect. That's hardly prophetic behavior, you know, but that doesn't diminish the fact I own that. So I'm less likely to say Joseph Smith was a martyr. I'm less likely to say that and to believe that. Joseph Smith was murdered, you know, but Joseph Smith was a man of God. And so I think what can eventually happen is that you can come full circle and do just like Gene does, where then you can then stand inside again and look out. But you look out through lenses that are not about judging the world, but that are saying, I am a part of this world, and here's how I manifest myself on the landscape, and here's how the rest of humanity manifests itself. So
I think that, contrary to Marilyn, we don't study our navels enough, because if we did, we would notice that some of them are pierced. And that's what I think that
or have lint.
The church does not want to know.
Well, according to President Hinckley, they can't be pierced now, so...
not even two
years. No. take care of that belly button lint later, would you? Thanks. Yeah, any other thoughts and comments, Don, or Doug?
Well, it seems to me that Sandstone is made up of various groups, some of whom have a specific issue and is given a voice to those groups. But I see a survival in maintaining attention and not letting one group dominate. And of course, I was not into the first part of your discussion about the theological issue. But I think the survival of Sunstone is dependent on our ability to, to attract people like me. I'm not in an institution, I'm not an academic, but I am very interested in pursuing the issues and pursuing the study of the gospel and the insights that come to me individually from that study through interacting with other members of the church.
And I think Sunstone is fabulous for that. And like I said, you know, it's great. We get a magazine, we get a symposium once a year. You know, that's fabulous. But I'm also talking about those of us who are out there who want to make this our pursuit, our life. You know, if we went around the room right now, I am not doing a thing with my degree. I work as an editor in a business-to-business publisher that writes about the paper industry. Mary Ellen manages databases for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. Dan is the editor of Sunstone. Granted, Dan's probably using his degree a little more than the rest of us are. So we have these degrees and we want to use them and we want to pursue these studies and develop this and contribute something to the growing pool of scholarship that's out there, to the growing number of resources on Mormonism. And we want to be a part of that experience and a part of that contribution. Say that I probably echo my colleagues. We don't feel inclined to continue in that pursuit and to become the next generation of Armand Maws and Lowell Benyons and Jan Schiff's, albeit Jan is not LDS, but still widely, widely respected among Mormon scholars and among Mormons in general. You know, we want to be that next generation, but we don't feel that encouragement to do so. So I think we have just we have a couple more minutes. It's actually 10 to 10, and I think we need to end now. But if anyone has any other questions or any comments, by all means. And I appreciate your being here and your time. Thank you very much.
Is there a website or email?
You can check out the website at gtu.edu.
And more about your hope.
Oh, my hope? I don't have a website. You can just email me. If any of you, you know, I'm going to look right here at Jerry because I happen to know Jerry's ward. If any of you in the Oakland First Ward would like a tax write-off and would like to endow a chair at the GTU, we'll name it in your honor. We'll name it in Brent's honor. You know what? Actually, that's what I would love, is to name something in Brent's honor. I think that would be really a wonderful... You can email me, actually, at jkincaid@paperloop. That's the name of my company. Paperloop. paperloop.com. Toby.
How would you describe Mr. Chair's work in Dallas?
Who's got money? It's all about money, isn't it? Isn't that how it works?
But it's got to have something besides.
Right. Right. Well, this is what it. Right.
How do you attract the money?
That's the thing. I mean, and this is part of what we hope will come out of some of the discussions that we're having here today. Both, you know, what Little I'd said here, what Kim McCall will have to say, and what Armand Ma and the panel that will be meeting with him will have to say today. You know, what we're trying to find out is there interest out there? Do we want to continue the legacy that some of these people have started and have built? Do we want to support, you know, young scholars that are coming up? And if we did start a Center for Mormon Studies, what would we want that to look like? What kind of topics would we want to cover? Do we want to cover history? Do we want to cover sociology? Do we even want to get into, you know, that murky area called psychology of Mormonism, you know, where we really start looking into the subtle little nuances of what make us who we are? Do we want to look at Mormons in the arts? You know, one of the papers that I wrote as a student at the GTU would look at Mormon art. And there has been some good Mormon art, but part of that is because again, just as you mentioned, Jerry, the church spent the money to send artists to France to receive classical training in the arts. And we have some beautiful art. 150 years ago, exactly. So we seem to be regressing in this sense. So the question becomes, you know, do we want to do this? What do we want it to look like? And what do we want the point to be? What is the point, ultimately? And you had a comment, Anne.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I'm really excited for the day that we move from learning about, you know, just the church, like what we're supposed to know about the church, to kind of like defending our faith, you know, and sort of like knowing, learning of what we're supposed to believe to, you know, I'm kind of making my own little mini witch right now. I'm working on a dissertation on the life of Mormon missionaries and what they go through. They go through doubts and the level of rich.
I want to talk to you afterwards.
Okay. Dan already is graciously agreed to fill out a little survey. I know that no one likes surveys, but it's about 10 minutes. And I would really appreciate any of our missionaries in this room if they could do that. So do a free stamp on there and you can just mail it back to me.
Good. See, and this is part of what I'm getting at too. If I had my graduate degree to do over again, as much as I enjoyed writing about the temple, you know, I would write my dissertation on how to reassimilate Mormon missionaries into post-mission life. And this is part of where this scholarship can take us, is into looking into things that allow us to look at our faith in new ways, but also allow us to help our members grow in ways that can be real and meaningful, and not just in those seminary institute real and meaningful ways. And that's not to say there's not value in that. There is a place for all of it. But things just like this, because these are pivotal events in the lives of Mormons, and yet, you know, we really have no way of assessing them. So, and Jack, did you have one comment?
Yes. Something I saw on the web the other day, discussion with one of the LDS contributors said, I don't blame anybody for just totally disbelieving my religion. But I personally have had so many experiences confirming it that there's no room for real doubt. And so it seemed to me that William James had a good idea when he wrote up varieties of religious experience. I think a possibly fruitful area for scholarship would be varieties of LDS or more of religious experience. Because I think that there's a great common denominator there across all of these various religious disciplines and spiritual traditions.
Well, and it'd be, you know, there's...
Could be the meeting point.
Well, and there's that challenge, too. You know, I am so convicted in my beliefs and in what I know. And yet, you know, perhaps one of the pitfalls of scholarship is that we demand empirical evidence. Yet there are some things that can't be empirically measured, and I think that, you know, there are many of us who concede that. I mean, I concede that in my thesis, you know, that there are things about the temple that affect people's lives, but they can't be measured empirically. And so we'll just concede that that's, you know, that that's what they are, and leave it at that for right now. So anyway, we're out of time. Thank you very much for your thoughts and contributions, and please think about this over the next, you know, over the coming weeks, and email me.